ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Chair.
My apologies, I'm not at all aware today. I took in, my tooth just came out broke, I'm swollen, I'm in pain, everything. I'm sorry for that. So for today, honorable members, I will please request you that you excuse me from the meeting because we don't get assistance from the doctor. Then can you just nominate the two persons of the my senior colleagues for that, and then you just be on my time like evening. If we can, I can be allowed to do the meeting now, just nominate the person who will act as the chair today. Yeah, and see if hopefully I'll get assistance. Another person. Mr. Chair. Chair, I nominate the report on the second, on the doctor to act as the chair. Honorable person has been nominated, any seconded? Another person has been nominated. Can I then give this to honorable members and the public advocate for the second position?
We have noted also the apology for honorable conduct. We have another friendship. Sorry, members, I will take it as we have already started the meeting. The agenda for today will be focusing on the briefing that we from the department, that is basically the team's report and the status of schools for school. I will therefore take the opportunity to give Mr. Chit.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. The Teams 2015 study is one of three international and regional studies that took.
I think it's for granted that we already know each other from these sources, but maybe let me just allow for that moment for members to introduce themselves and then also the department. I'll give the year of the nomination.
morning. I'm Stella Matambo, Chief Education Specialist, Education Social Services. My name is Mark Shepherd, Acting Director of National Service.
Good morning, I'm Sydney Gunther, the Director of the Business and Chance Good morning, I'm Fred Martin,
data that is presented in the study. Now, the study study has also been administered by an independent service provider, which is the Human Sciences Research Council, HSRC, and they conducted the study in South Africa and presented the results on the 29th of November 2016. Now, in terms of the achievements in grade 9 maths and science, South Africa achieved 372 points in mathematics and 358 in science. So that's at the grade 9 level. So we're still slightly below our target of the 400 points, but if you notice in this slide, that we are one of the biggest improvers, well, the biggest improvers in terms of trends over time. And that's the power of service, is that we're not only looking at the current context, but how have we moved, how have we shifted our performance? So we've got the largest improvement by 87 points in mathematics and 90 points in science. So if you look at it in terms of that context, then South Africa is on top of the list. Now, looking at the achievement from 2003 to 2015, we can see that we are a system that's on the rise. There's an upward trajectory on the system. So from 268 in science to 358, that's a significant improvement, and in mathematics as well. Now, in terms of TIMSS, one of the critical aspects of the data is to look at it in terms of benchmarks. And TIMSS allocates benchmarks to characterize performance of learners. So we're looking at a scale of below 400, between 400 to 475, and the advanced levels, which is 625 and above. So this is where we can see that we've made good progress over the period 2003 to 2015, but we're not quite where we want to be. So those green bars, if you can, that are noticeable on the slide, shows that between 2003 and 2015, the green bars are becoming less, which means the number of learners performing below the 400 are becoming fewer, which means that we are improving. But we need to shift the system critically to be more learners achieving above the 400 benchmark. So that would be the goal, that would be the target going forward into the next cycle of TIMSS, which is planned for 2019. So it's a similar story across math and science. Also, the performance by school type shows that there is an increase between when we compare no-fee schools to fee-paying, to independent schools. Our independent schools are still performing better than our public schools. But what's critical is that there is still a gap between the no-fee and the fee-paying. So we need to strengthen our actions, our interventions, on closing the gap between the no-fee and the fee-paying school performance. Although we must note that there's an improvement across all three school types. So performance by province is also encouraging, that we now can see there's an improvement across all provinces, except the Western Cape, and the top performing province in grade 9, which is Gauteng, which achieved 408 points in mathematics and 405 points in science. So they were a province that achieved above the 400 benchmark. But the biggest improver, if we look at trends over time, was Limpopo, which had quite a big difference from the 2003, so by more than 100 points. So also the provincial inequality seems to be decreasing. The 2003 difference between the highest and the lowest province for science was 205 points. In 2003, in 2015, it was reduced to 77 points. Again, an indication that when we look across time, the differences are becoming smaller. Now, this can be attributed to several contextual conditions, and we look at what goes on in the schooling community, and these factors, access to flush toilets, access to running tap water, household education of parents, all these point that learners who had access to better facilities, who had have parents with a higher quality of education did better in the same studies than those. That's what that slide, that's what we can draw from this. So that's quite significant going forward. We would want to strengthen this in terms of the relationships that learners have in school, the contextual conditions, especially access to basic facilities. In terms of bullying and language and academic success, there's also some interesting trends. So learners who do not experience bullying scored higher in the assessment than those who did, especially in mathematics. That difference was 68 points. There's also, as we know, as research has suggested, there's a very strong correlation between learners speaking the language of the test and performance. So learners who had that match scored 60% higher. And then learners where there was a strong emphasis on academic success, especially from the household, they scored higher in the survey as well. Now that's grade 9. In terms of grade 5, we also scored in the 300s. We scored 376 points. Critically, I should mention that this was the first time in TIMSS that we participated in the grade 5 level. So it's the first time that we have data at this critical stage. And when we participate in the next study, we could then compare. So we don't have trend data for grade 5, but we have now a baseline of 376 that can now we can set targets going forward. So in terms of the benchmarks, we can see that quite a lot of our learners are achieving slightly below the 400 benchmark. So we just need to get that bracket of learners moving up, and that will lift the overall mean of grade 5 learners. Significant to note that we have 1.3% of our learners achieving at the very advanced level, which is more than 625 points. So when we compare ourselves to other countries in similar brackets to us, in Botswana, in Morocco, who have similar sort of context and who participated in similar grade levels, they didn't have any learners achieving at this bracket. So also at the grade 9, it was about 1%, but it was quite significant at the grade 5 level to see that we do have learners who are capable of those advanced skills. Across the provinces, Western Cape was the highest performing province at the grade 5 level, scoring 441 points, so that's above the 400 benchmark. Gauteng as well, so those two provinces have historically jostled for number one position in TIMSS, but we're looking at how the provinces compare to one another. So the difference between the highest and the lowest performance is about 98 points. Going forward, we would want to check whether that provincial inequality is getting smaller and not larger. Critical at the grade 5 level is learners' access to early years of schooling. And what the study showed, that the more years that the learners are exposed to prior to grade 1, that has a positive influence of learners. And at least 48% of our learners indicated that they had 2 years or more of preschool. So there was a positive relationship between the number of years in pre-primary education and math achievement. So we want to strengthen our current interventions and programs at this level. So the quality of preschool education does have an effect, and it becomes very critical when we look at the no-fee schools, because that's where we from the study, the data shows that this is the sector that has the least amount of exposure to quality preschool education. So more emphasis on exposing this sector, the no-fee schools, to more years of preschool schooling going forward. Context and conditions in terms of the educators. What the study is showing is that compared to 2003, where the learners that are currently in schools are now exposed to teachers with higher qualifications. So we have 46% of grade 5 teachers, grade 5 learners who have maths teachers with at least a bachelor degree, 73% of grade 9 maths, and 46 of grade 9 science. So in terms of experience, we are higher than the international average. average. So the percentage of learners who are taught by educators with 10 or more years, you can see the different breakdown, is higher than 50%, which is the international average. Also, we have the percentage of learners who are taught by educators who indicated that they are satisfied with the education. So teacher satisfaction was also higher than the international norm. So those are quite positive stories for the South African education sector. So in terms of learner absenteeism and achievement, again, learners with low absenteeism did better than learners who indicated they were absent over a period of time. So in school exposure, continuous attendance positively influences. In terms of gender, one of the critical things that the study shows that girls are performing better than boys. So the boy learner, and this seems to correlate in other studies as well, is suddenly becoming a vulnerable group that more attention and energy needs to be focused on. There was a statistical difference at the grade 5 level in the performance of boys and girls. And the study also showed that the boy learner is more exposed to bullying and exposed to grade repetition. So these are some of the contextual factors that are influencing achievement. I'll move along. Achievement by age is not an issue. The workbooks and textbooks, in terms of, and that's a very critical part of our interventions as a department, it was quite pleasing to know that in grade 5, 88% of grade 5 learners have reported having their own workbooks. At the grade 9, 82% of learners have their own maths textbook. And that sort of has an influence on the achievement of the learners in those particular grades. So some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves: at what level should we pitch the workbooks, and how does it link up to the learners' achievement levels in these studies? How do the teachers and learners are currently using the workbooks? So the key findings and in summary of the study is that there's a good story, there's an encouraging story that we can draw from since 2015. We are moving from a very low base, which was picture in 2003, to now to a low national average. So we're sort of moving from the ICU to a more stable environment. We're not yet where we want to be, but we can see that there is a significant traction in the right direction. We're a system that's showing an upward trajectory. So the achievement is still relatively unequal across school types and across provinces, but we can see that the trends are showing that this is decreasing from the 2003 situation. And what parents do with their children at home, what teachers do with the children in the school, and that has an effect on the performance of our learners. So socioeconomic factors and early educational influences are critical factors that we need to strengthen. Good quality preschool teaching and the environment, teaching and learning interventions must focus sharply on what happens inside schools. And what we can draw from the countries that are doing well in terms, especially from the East, such as Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan, these countries, when they sort of looked at their previous TIMSS results, did quite radical changes. And one of the things that they looked at was reducing the curriculum package from having it from a wide curriculum covering several topics to a narrower, more sharper focus that's more in-depth. So this could be a lesson that we can take forward as we review our curriculum and look at strengthening and getting a sharper focus on what we're exposing our learners to in terms of fundamental skills. So it's a focus on tangible assets that's necessary and the non-tangible assets that seems to be influencing achievement. So whilst we have to focus on resources, we also have to focus on attitudes, expectations, safety of learners as well. Gender is something that we've mentioned, and the home context. These, what we have called, effects that are additive to a upward achievement. So the way forward for TIMSS is to have a very clear picture, clear goal of where we want, what we want to achieve in the upcoming cycle, in 2019 and in 2023. The first first critical barrier would be to crack that 400 benchmark and to get more learners into that category. So the findings can be used to raise standards in the classroom. We have, since the release of TIMSS, we've had a mathematics Indaba where we've looked at very critical aspects of what would constitute fundamental mathematical knowledge. And how can we create a South African pedagogical identity that all teachers can embrace and be very clear on, and that can have a positive influence going forward. In terms of some of the actions that we will be going forward from the study, because we don't just want the study to now stay at just a reporting level, there will be a round table that's planned for early this year, in the next month actually, that will focus on more provincial interventions on using the TIMSS data. Currently, the TIMSS information is being disseminated to provinces through roadshows, and we're almost halfway through that process. We will also be releasing the TIMSS release items to schools together with diagnostic reports, so that not only the schools that participated in the sample, but all schools, primary schools and secondary schools, get exposure to what are the quality of items that are expected in these international studies, so that that can further influence school-based assessment, to further encourage teachers to expose learners to these kinds of items and to these kinds of levels, so that going forward, that also strengthens not only the school-based assessment, but our performance in these international studies. So this is the data that we'll be looking to capitalize on and strengthen partnerships with our colleagues from Japan, Korea, and Cuba, where we're also trying to improve our technical expertise in mathematics in South Africa. Chair, I can stop there. For me, it's just
appreciate the schools to prepare the children that I can come here every time. And I would like also just to know that when analyzing this study, do you also consider the language challenges that the children are facing? How do we compare our textbooks that we are using with other countries? Let me just pause there.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I think this is a very good opportunity for us to honestly and frankly reflect on the functioning of the system. And I'm a little bit perturbed by some of the language that gets used in these reports, such as this is a good story to tell and we're on top of the dog. Because it sounds to me like the data is being massaged to paint a good picture when the picture on the ground actually isn't as very good as the one that you portray. And that does worry me a little bit, because if we take this data to mean that we're doing well and we're in the ascendancy, it could lead to complacency in the system. So I would much rather we focus on what we can do to improve the system and to get the ranking up, and so that we can truly compete with the best in the world. Because as much as you say we're on top of the log, we did come last in science out of all of the countries that participated, and we came second last in maths, and we came last out of all the other African countries that were competing. So the improvements that we've made, that you are saying we made, it's because we're coming off an extremely low base, as you said. So I just want to guard against this kind of complacency and for us to just to all buy into this notion that we're now a system on the rise and everything is on the way up. I just want to open with those cautionary words. Then I've got some questions about the data itself and the way that the tests are administered. My first question is, I'm not quite clear on why we test grades 5 and 9 when the rest of the world that participates in the study tests grades 4 and 8. If you could just elaborate a little bit more on why we are testing learners who are older or at least a grade above the other learners who are tested from the other countries. That's the first question. The second question is the data comparable year on year? In other words, is this just a snapshot of the system in a particular year, or can we say that it is benchmarked against the data in previous years so that we can make meaningful comparisons? Because we know with the SACMEC data, for example, one of the criticisms has been that you can't use that data to compare it year on year. You can only really get a snapshot because the way that the methodology is done has changed over the years. So I just want to make sure that we're not falling into that trap as well, where we can't actually compare the data year on year, because that would be a methodological error. It's also a criticism of the ANIS. So I'd just like your comments on the comparability of the data year on year. And then I've also got a question around the sampling. I saw from the presentation that 297 schools were sampled. Can you just give us a bit more information on how the sample is determined? And is it representative of all the schools in the system? And is it the same sample as was used in previous studies so that we can truly benchmark these results against previous results? Then I just want to come back to what I was saying at the beginning about finding ways to improve the system. And I think that we should spend a lot of our time talking about how we improve the system so that we don't get complacent. So I'd like to ask you what you think the number one problem is that is holding us back in terms of maths and science education. If you could fix one thing in the system tomorrow, what would it be? Now, I suspect that it is probably the quality of maths and science teachers and possibly even the quantity of maths and science teachers, because I do believe there is a shortage of quality maths and science teachers. And I just want to end off with an anecdote from our oversight trip that we did to KwaZulu-Natal a couple of weeks ago. We went to visit Isiso Seto Secondary School. And at that school, not one learner passed mathematics. And I think, I can't remember how many learners, but it was a sizable number of learners. This is a standard size school. Not one learner passed mathematics, and only 9% of learners at that school passed math literacy. So in other words, if you are a learner from that area, you only have one choice of school to go to. The odds are really stacked against you that you're going to pass mathematics or even math literacy. And that means the odds are really stacked against you to succeed outside of school, when you finish school. And this is a tragedy that's being replicated in schools across the country. When we looked deeper into why there was this failure of the school to produce learners who could succeed in mathematics and math literacy, we found that the teacher who was teaching math and math literacy doesn't have any post-school qualification and just has a matric himself. But that teacher is still at the school, and it seems that the school and the department is absolutely powerless to change the teacher. But of course, if that teacher remains in the school, every year we're going to have the same story. If that teacher cannot teach math, those learners will continue to fail. So can you give us a comment on the state of math and science teaching in our country so that we can interrogate whether is that not the key thing that is holding us back from helping our learners succeed in math and science? Thank you.
Thank you. I want to also welcome the presentation. And also congratulate the department on the achievement, on the achievement. I think the upward achievement showing progress. Although we are not there, Australians and country is still much achieved. If I can be clear here, how are these schools here selected in South Africa, for example, part of the country? So we look at the issue of untiming in those provinces that are themselves, different kind of provinces. And then when I read the presentation, is it possible that maybe in future, not now, that we get performance? You know, when we look, why we see this performance, which is international, we compare it international, that's good. But can we compare the teams, even also internal, to see how our own provinces are doing? How our own regions are doing, and particularly in the schools, you see, we can look at the school rate. The schools per school, this is where they are. Is it possible that we can get that information? And even in the same schools that participated, do they get the same results? They do not see yet the evidence. And then. I'm not sure whether we have a district. How many districts are participating here? I've been looking at the list. There is 48. They say 48. 48 countries. I have seen few African countries that have been mentioned in here. And even you see only Botswana, that is our neighboring country. Are the other countries, our neighboring countries, not participating? Or they are in the cold, afraid of South Africa and Botswana? So if we can be explained, we must know exactly what's happening with it. You see, sometimes we can aim high with Singapore. Singapore is far away there. You see, but we're failing to compare the same Swaziland, same Namibia, same, as I said, in Nigeria, you see, they are here, a stone throw away. Can we compare even with those, you see, within our continent and check ourselves? Why am I comparing with those who are first world countries?
let's look at our own. How far are we going with our own third world countries? You indicated very well that when you were doing the analysis, right? Those learners that are speaking their language, right, they perform very better. Maybe it's best. I've seen that you said that. They perform better. And then even those with flush toilets, they perform better with water. How are that? You see, if you compare with the first world, Singapore, now what they are looking at is just to improve how you just have a bathroom, the remote control for a flush toilet. See, you are still struggling to get even to that flush toilet. You see, how do we compare with those countries with a similar environment with ours? With ours. So that you can check, hey, no, we're getting there. You see, that even can push the government, the entire government, to make sure that all the toilets have got the toilets where we want it to be. The issue of environment itself. How did you compare the environment of all those 48 countries? We must even get those things. In terms of the pedagogical knowledge, how are we? Are we compared to Singapore? Are we compared to you say, Taipei, China? In terms of, when you compare a teacher here and a teacher in Taipei, I don't know if I call it right, but it's there. When I was reading, it was like Taipei. Yeah. The pedagogical knowledge, is it the same with ours? If that's not the same, you see, I know that you can put it in the recommendation. Then lastly, what is your contribution? Those are dealing with teams. What are your contributions behind closed doors? Now we are in closed doors, we are dealing with the Department of Education. Now, what is your contribution behind closed doors to improve the math and science? Yes, after taking into account what I've indicated later on. Okay, thank you.
What we are improving on this side, we are allowing people who are underperforming to proceed. I don't know whether we are going to that way, we are going to reach our target of 400 points. And another question is, how could suddenly drop to the extent that we saw on the screen? I don't know whether any analysis has been made of what is happening there. And if we are doing well in the Congo, a province which generally underperformed. What is this metric that they have used to improve in math and science? And can these be duplicated in other schools? Because it looks like we can learn something from just as one felt when looking at matric results for basis, when one felt that they could learn something from the certificate. I am puzzled about a statement which says learners who use their own workbooks fare better. I don't know what that means. How does one use one's own workbook? You buy it because the department is in supply, because out of the workbooks are part of the NCSM that is supplied by the department. But if by getting your own workbook, we are encouraging people to get their own workbooks because parents are very keen that their children do well in mathematics and science. So if there is the possibility of improving simply by getting your own workbook, I think the parents. The question of language has been touched on by colleagues before me, and I know that there is this talk that we should learn, or our children should learn, in their own first language. That will improve the results. The question is, how far are we from the state where mathematics and science can be taught in particular African languages? And then finally, it concerns me that I don't see Cuba listed when it comes to international statistics. I mention Cuba because we get a lot of help from Cuba in terms of educators, especially in science and mathematics. It would be nice to see how are the standards in Cuba comparing internationally, but possibly maybe they do not participate, which is the concern of my colleague here, who is my neighbor, Honorable Ngunu, and says, where are other African states? I think it could give a better perspective of how good is the help we are getting from people when it comes to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. All the questions have basically been asked. I just want to reiterate what Honorable Davis said on the good story to tell. I think the good story to tell here is complacency, and we better start moving away from that because it could cost us dearly in the years to come. Excuse me, I just have a bit of a sore throat today. If I may ask, you keep on speaking about better qualified educators. Doing oversight, there's a specific district in Mpumalanga who is complaining about deployed educators that have absolutely no qualifications to teach either maths or science. And I'd like to know where and when your studies were done to get to this, that your educators are much better qualified. And then you speak about interventions, how you're going to strengthen interventions for an early start in school. We know that our grade R learners are struggling because of, if I may put it bluntly, incompetent teachers. So I'd like to know what these interventions are going to be. And then the learners subjected to bullying. What is being done about that? Are you sure that all the code of conduct for learners are in place? And are both the victims and the perpetrators being counseled with regard to this? Thank you very much, Chair. My first question is that I need to find out clarity on the issue of underperformance in provinces like the Northwest, which has drastically dropped to the third from the bottom. Just a little explanation as to how do you justify this underperformance of this province, especially if you compare it with its performance in the NSC results. What is it that they are doing wrong? Are they setting their priorities wrong? Or there is it an issue of the social dynamics? The other point that I needed to check relates to how you feed the information into other interventions of the department. We all know that ANA was one program that was meant maybe to try to improve performance in the lower grades, especially the stated ones. But since ANA has been cut off, how do you see the country improving its performance throughout, not in the sampled schools or all the sampled schools per provinces? The other point that I wanted to check relates to the issue of the cognitive demand. Because when you go to matric, we expect that the learners will be able to relate with the higher level questions. How does TIM assist in building our learners to be able to adapt and or to be able to deal with those questions during the assessments? The other point is the issue of just a comment. I think the report is very clear in terms of highlighting the many challenges that we have had and the improvements, not only in the assessments that are being made in the team's test. Because when you look at the access to education, that one we have crossed the line. Even the socio-economic issues, I think that to a certain extent we have already crossed a line. The issue for me relates to the issue of training of teachers to impart the necessary knowledge to the learners. How do you ensure that this is captured in teacher development? Thank you. You can proceed, Sergeant.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll start with Honorable Messingham. I think on the issue of the 2015, we note the concern.
reality that they are probably way ahead of South Africa. But they start from a high in the 600s to their scope for improvement is very much smaller. So while you look at it as being a drop, you cannot really say that that South Africa is any better than them. We need to keep that in perspective. So I think the Western Cape is, we may not be where we want to be, above the center point, but I think you will provide an explanation. And the Limpopo, I mean, the MSC does give us some schools which provide excellent mathematics results. But if you look at the province overall, there's a lot more that has to be done. There's just a certain number of schools that are providing excellence. And when we talk of the improvement there, it is actually starting off even a lower base than the national average. So there is improvement, but that improvement comes because they were probably way back in 2003 or even 1995, the last ranked province. So it is come to that towards the honorable lady's point. And we can take examples from the Free State and so forth, but that's coming up on because now the Free State is maybe the flavor of the season at the present moment. So if there's a new team next year, then we'll look at them. But I think for the whole, to go to a question of honorable Davis, is you need something that will lead to improvement, that will be sustainable and not because today I bought, if I use a soccer example, I bought a striker with $4 goals, and tomorrow if he's injured, I can't score any goals. So I think that we need to keep in mind. And I think what in the report talks about learners using their own workbook, I think it's not it's referring to the book that's applied by the department, and we mean own is that they have their own individual copy. And that when they work off their own, then they do much better than if they had to share that. And then I think one of the concerns we should pick up from the department is if we say from this sample, only 88% of learners have their own book, then why is it that 12% have not received their own copy? I think that's a concern we should look at. And if you accept it, it's only 300 schools, but if you accept it across the system, I think the next report will show that we are saying that we are supplying workbooks that are almost 100%. And this study contradicts that in the sample. So it's something for the department to then look into. I think in the issues of the language, I think the deputy minister in the last meeting touched on it, that we haven't done much. In terms of getting learners to learn in their own mother tongue. But some of the initiatives of the department to introduce African language in every school, and then some of the terminology for math and science in particular will still remain a terminology that is international. But it is something to look at. I think the committees that we have in terms of the curriculum can look at this, but in terms of the African languages in getting them in schools, they're teaching a mother tongue. It's something that we should work towards. And I think Dr. Chetty will elaborate that this is basically a voluntary study. So a country like Cuba will decide whether to take part. Other countries will decide, and Africa will decide not to, whether to take part or not. And just on the questions, some of the questions raised by the Honorable Davies, I think the point about the terminology you use, whether you read well or whether it's on the right. We also use the terminology for some of the slides that we are moving from the left to the right as well. So I think the point is taken that the focus should be on how to fix the problem, which is to look at improvement in mathematics. And I think Dr. Chetty will add if I've not covered this. We are writing in grades 5 and 9, and other countries write in grades 4 and 8. At a particular point, we didn't write the cycle, I think, in 2006. Mr. Pando, the minister at the time, withdrew us because we had been performing poorly. But then you can't take part in the test when it suits you. And you think you're going to do well, and when you don't do well, you then say you're not taking part. That's where Mr. Mochirka has come in and said, we'll continue to participate whether you do well or you don't do well, so that it tells us whether we're doing the right things or not the right things, or there are other things we can do better. So that's when we came back in 2011.
and the decision to write in grade 9 is that if our grade 9s were already performing poorly, if we're performing poorly in grade 9, then we turn in trouble. We need even bigger trouble because these children have moved out of grade 8. So we are not even in the race with the rest of the countries when they are taking part in learners of grade 8 because they are ahead. And I think the other point to make when you talk of the points being 87 and 90 or whatever, but improvement of about 40 points taken as one grade. So we may have made two grades of improvement, but we are behind maybe by another two grades compared to international standards. I think you explain the data in terms of SACNIC. I will offer another thing himself as well on the question of how do we improve the system and what is the one problem. There isn't one problem, but the one problem if you're looking at is, I think you touched on, is teachers and having the right teachers with the right specialization. And in some schools, some of the problem is that you have the right teacher at the grade 12, but at the lower level you don't have that. Also the subjects in terms of math and science have moved on, and some of the teachers we have, basically they need to be reskilled in some of the areas. So I think investing into the teachers is one area, and probably where if you start, you can see a difference coming in the future. Just offer that my own view. I live with a six-year-old who already starts to multiply. And I look at myself, and I don't think I was really at preschool. Probably taken senior primary. So I think investing in the teachers, that would be my suggestion in that. Dr. Suki?
Thanks, indeed. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, honorable members, for the input. Perhaps I must start with more the technical clarity that was posed. So, and I think it cuts across some of the inputs from various members. But on the sampling, and in this study we had 297 schools, and whether it's comparable to previous studies, it's the sampling trend remains the same. So we receive the sampling categories from the IEA. We provide our EMIS information for the respective grades that are participating. So the stratification is the same. So it will be a representative sample of the population of students. Now we have, across the country, about 7% independent schools, 93% public schools. So the sample has to reflect those characteristics. In this study, in the 2015, we had 65% no-fee schools. We had 31% fee-paying schools, and we had 4% independent schools. So, and that's a similar kind of sampling stratification that we had in the previous study. So it's proportional to the grade population, but it's in line with the sampling, the scientific sampling stratification that are given to us by the IEA. So we can't interfere. We can't choose our own sample for a particular study. We give a representative sample, and then schools are randomly selected across those stratification criteria. So we stratify across province, we stratify across school type, and then within school, a intact class is sampled for the study. So it is in compliance to the regulations that are given to us from the IEA. And they make sure that the sampling criteria and verification is done by Statistics Canada. So each country has to comply to those sampling criteria to make sure that we can measure trends over time in a reliable way. So, you know, each cycle that we participate in, that has to be verified before we even administer in the study. So even going into 2019, the similar kind of proportions will reflect the sampling size in those studies. So added to that, and the TIMSS study gives us specific data for specific subjects. We've got to understand the scope of the study, we have to understand the limit of the study. study is not designed to give information beyond those stratifications. So we don't stratify according to district. And so we cannot give information, therefore, on district information. We can give information on a national level. We can give information on a provincial level. It's a sample of schools. So the schools are there as a measure of what's happening in the system. It is not meant to give specific information back to the schools that participated, but to generalize the findings and say, as a representative sample of schools, this is the health of the South African education system. So we would need to look at other types of studies if we wanted to give specific information to schools. And the ANA was one kind of study that was looking at all schools participating so that you could give feedback back to individual schools. So the terms is not, it's a slightly kind of different methodology on that. So, and with the comparability as well of the results, I think the sampling is one criteria. The design of the study is to have questions that are actually the same. So TIMS releases certain test items, but the large majority of the core items remain intact. The purpose of that is that you can measure trends over time, because you're giving the same questions to different cohorts of learners at different time points. So that's the credibility and the design of the study. It's a similar with SACMEG, and I must say SACMEG as well, you can use to measure trends over time. I'm not sure where the information came from, but that's a similar kind of study that uses items that are confidential, that are used at different time points. It's only in the ANA where we don't have that kind of design, where the questions are exposed, so, you know, where we have a different methodology. But with SACMEG and TIMS and the international study, it's purposely designed so that the questions are confidential, they're administered, they are not released to public consumption, so that you can measure this sense of whether there's an improvement or whether there's a decline very accurately from that kind of methodology. So in terms of our participation, I think you came across various inputs, and I think the VDG has alluded to it already as well. But we've got to keep in mind, and I think, and we welcome the inputs, that South Africa has been very brave, and that shouldn't be understated. If these studies, require an investment that some countries are not prepared to. There's probably 190 countries worldwide. These are just 48, which means some countries deliberately do not study for various reasons. We would have to go and have consultations with them why they don't. Within BRICS, we don't have Brazil. We don't have India. We have Russia that participates in this study, and we have South Africa. China does not participate. Chinese Taipei does. So countries participate in various other programs, I must admit. Some participate in PISA, and they have their own regional studies, and they do that for various reasons. South Africa takes the initiative, takes the bold step of, despite our low performance in comparing to these other very well-established systems, that our minister is committed to our participation in even future cycles, so that we can have a data-driven system, that we can have evidence. We're less concerned of how we are doing in comparison to other countries. Our attention is how we're doing in relation to our own progress, to our own targets, to our own interventions. And this is a study that gives us valuable and credible evidence to say whether the system is shifting in the right direction, and of course whether to make adjustments in certain areas. So we acknowledge that within that context, that we're not where we want to be, but we can see very clearly, and the data shows that there is an improvement. And 87 points, as VDG has alluded to, is equivalent to 2 grades. So that is significant. That is significant in itself. So Chair, as I wrap up, and perhaps I must, given the time limit, come to your questions on going forward. And there's various things that we need to do, but it's not something that we need to change direction. We need to strengthen the current intervention, which we're currently doing at Grade R. We need to focus on improving fundamental skills and knowledge of learners and training teachers to focus on those fundamental skills. So the cognitive domains and the content of the assessment framework that TIMSS gives us information to strengthen those areas. So work in each of those areas has already started. We're not starting from scratch. The department has several interventions in MSP, in early grade, reading, numeracy, and literacy. So we know we need to build on that so that we can increase our performance. So in terms of going forward, we know we need to assist our teachers, especially in diagnosing and profiling. So that's one of the key things that we need to sort of strengthen as a system. Learning from Singapore, learning from these other countries, the great question, looking at what we can gather from these countries. We can gather as to how they focus on specific skills in the curriculum. Like I said in the presentation, they've narrowed their curriculum. They've reduced the content. So those are big things that we need to talk about and look at going forward. And that can help strengthen maths and science teaching in our current learning.
Thank you very much, Dr. I think that the department has already responded to our questions. My view is that we have got two other presentations. So,
thank you, Chair. I just want to make a quick follow-up. I know we've got other presentations, but I do think we need to consider that before we have these meetings. We need to look at the agenda and make sure that we can fit everything onto the agenda. Because, you know, there's lots of important data for us to interrogate here, and we haven't even really got into it yet. And it just does concern me as a trend in this committee that we seem to be packing the agenda with lots and lots of presentations. So we have a very superficial interrogation of the presentations without really going into the details. So I think we must bear that in mind going forward.
Thank you. I note your point, but I would like us to refrain from discussing that, because as this committee we started the program for the portfolio committee and agreed on it, maybe it can be something that we deal with and not as it presently moved. So just do your follow up and then
thank you, Chair. It is regrettable to have to talk about housekeeping in front of our guests, but the problem is that we never discuss housekeeping without our guests, and we haven't had a chance as a committee to discuss the agenda for the term. So it's very difficult for us to raise issues otherwise, so I just want to make that point. Let me move on to my follow-ups. Just on the grades, using the grade 5 and 9s when the other countries use grades 4 and 8, it wasn't quite clear to me from your answer why we use the 5 and 9. It seemed to me that you were saying that we are compensating for the poor performance of our learners, which is why we need to use the grades 5 and 9. Is that right? Because if that's true, then that would seem to negate the claim that there's been an improvement. So if you could just clarify that for me. That's the first thing. Then the sampling. Thank you for the clarity on the sampling. That was very useful. It seems to me that even with the stratification, it seems to be a fairly small sample, especially within the stratifications, and especially when you look at the provinces, the provincial data within those stratifications. And obviously, as the smaller the sample gets, the higher the margin of error. And I'm just wondering what the margin of error then would be for this data, because presumably that is worked out for this data so that we can see if there is a possibility for error. And then just lastly, thank you also for what you said about the comparability of the data year on year, and that does allay some of the concerns about the comparability, because you say that the same questions are used every year, so that it's directly comparable. I would just like to ask then, what measures are in place to ensure the security of those questions, and that those questions cannot be given to respondents the following year to improve the performance of the system? Because then that becomes a very, very, it becomes a possibility that could happen. So what security measures are in place to prevent?
With the grade 5 and 9 as well, and I apologize, I should have given some information on that as well. What the IEA does is that questions are set, and they're usually set within a certain age group. So we have to then, as a country, look at within that age group, which is the most appropriate grade that is suitable for. So there's countries can choose. So it's not a standard rule that all countries need to be in grade 4 and need to be in grade 8. It is that in those countries, that's the age and that's the grade, equivalent grade that they find is more suitable. So for us, those content questions are more suitable for grade 5 and for grade 9. So we have a northern hemisphere and we have a southern hemisphere, so there's different testing points as well. So, you know, that has to be kept in mind. So it's not something that we are doing so that we can sort of give an extra grade or to make it easier for another age cohort. So there is a relatively standard rule within the IA, and we are in compliance with grade 5 and 9. In terms of the sampling, yes, the sample is a scientific sample. So, because these studies are very expensive, so you've got to look at cost and efficiency. And these sample sizes are determined by the IEA for the country using very sophisticated software. Like I said earlier, the sample is determined by Statistics Canada. So we can't tell them, look, we need so many schools, we can tell them we want to do more schools, but and over some. But bearing in mind the cost and the efficiency, that these studies usually take up. This size of schools is an appropriate size to give the information that you want to at a national and provincial level. If you want to give information at the district, then you would have to stratify further and increase the sample size going forward. But the TIMS study across countries doesn't look at the impact. So, yeah. The security, yes. So in line with the measures again, and you know, we follow the prescripts of the IEA with every step, right? Sampling, to test development, to test administration, to analysis, there's security checks that are built in. So with the tests being administered at school, this is done by an independent service provider with field workers that are accredited. They take the tests to the school. Upon completion of the test, the tests are brought back very safe and secure. And with TIMS, we have a design, a matrix design, which means you have blocks of questions that are administered to learners. So no learner, no two learners get the same test. They are equivalent questions, and the design is that, you know, if a learner is sitting next to each other, you're going to get a slightly different test. But the design is they can link it, they use scaling measures, and they use questions that are linked together. So it's not like a paper can leak, for example, like in the NEC or in other large-scale studies. This has a specific design kept intact. The schools don't have exposure to it, and they are brought back and safely stored and secured. Each script is barcoded so that it can be traced. We can trace missing scripts, missing learners. That's very much part of the data cleaning process. Again, according to the prescripts of the IEA. It's a very simple question. And we've done it since 1995. So
thank you very much, Doctor. Thank you very much for providing meaningful responses to the members. Mr. Davis, I think that we still have an opportunity to interact with the doctor on any other matter. We have not been exhausted in the meeting, so please correct. I would like to take this opportunity for us to move to the next item on our agenda, which is the status report on schools reopening for 2017. This is you. Can you guide us on the situation? Okay, thank you very much. Over to you.
make it an indulgence to take all the areas that relate to me so that I don't keep coming and going and then the colleagues come in. So we may skip a few slides, but I'll indicate which ones and colleagues will come in. What we want to do is to give just a brief, a broad oversight of where things are at with school readiness. Many of the issues the honorable members know, and what we have done is to work in accordance with what we said before. There are three phases of school readiness monitoring. We look at pre-closure, just to make sure that the things that should be done before school closure have been done. We go at the beginning of the year to do two things, to check on the things that we picked up on, but there are specific things that have to be ready when school open, that happen at the beginning of the year. And lastly, for those things that are bigger, like for instance your buildings that are not in place and those major things, if they're not ready as we open and services are committed to following up on them, we go in the middle of the year to check that those things have been addressed. The four main areas, the four main issues that we believe are fundamental for the beginning of the year is that all admissions and registration should have been completed, that teachers, with really a focus on teachers in class for each grade, for each subject, that's an area that we look at LPSM and basic infrastructure. So our presentation captures those high-level issues. However, it also goes into a little bit more depth because what you do when you're monitoring, you don't monitor in depth as line functionaries in the department do. So that's where the line functionaries will come in terms of teacher provisioning. I will ask my colleagues to come in terms of basic infrastructure. I will ask colleagues to come in. But we've also taken the opportunity to also look at issues of progress learners as well as the second chance metric program. And those in those areas also I'll ask colleagues to come in. Chair, I won't go through every single slide. Safe to say this year the approach firstly was that we monitored two districts per province and two circuits in each of those districts. And the reason here was to make sure that while we generalize per province, we're able to problem solve. And it's easier to problem solve if you are focused, if you see that something is a problem in a particular district or in particular district so that you don't just simply generalize. Some of the key findings, and again, I'm looking at high-level findings. In terms of admissions, over time, we think we've done, you know, fairly well. And what we have picked up this year is that even the issue of late registration was handled much better. Registrations in most of the predictable hotspots, not where people, you know, where there were long lines because of good performance in 2016, but where you know that it's in metros, it's in big cities, and there's historically long queues and applications that come at the end, those were handled at district level, not at school level, and that worked well. Challenges remain really the main challenge around the issue of admissions and registrations, which impacts on LPSM infrastructure, it impacts on a whole range of things when you have larger numbers than you expected. The problem is still persistent late applications by parents. An issue that we've also paid attention to is the issue of unplaced learners. We have, as I said, we have hotspots that we identified even before we closed in all of the provinces, and that would be your city centers and your metros. So we've been, but the main provinces that had challenges with huge numbers of applications were Gauteng and the Western Cape.
Housing had over 30,000 applications for, I don't have my numbers here, for 30,000 for grade 1 and grade 8. That was before the end of the year. Those were online, so they were able to manage them. By the time schools opened, they had placed all of those, but they had an additional 2,000 when schools opened, as of the 2,284 were unplaced by the time we finalized this presentation. Western Cape is still dealing with the unplaced learners. When we checked on Monday, they were still standing at 2,966. For the rest of the provinces, it's manageable, unplaced learners. Even though it looks like this, it was not as the challenge was not as great as in Gauteng and in the Western Cape. In KwaZulu-Natal, we've since received information, the challenge with KwaZulu-Natal and Northwest is that their management of unplaced learners is not centralized. That's why their data is not complete at this point. It hangs at different points, and therefore to consolidate from everyone takes them longer. We received information this morning from KwaZulu-Natal, with one district outstanding, Umlazi outstanding, that they had 40 unplaced learners. That is being verified because it only came in this morning. We still haven't received the final figure or any figure from Northwest. Post-commissioning, I will not go into, and I will ask Mfela to go into when we get to the point, but the issue, because the issue of teachers is a major issue and we want to give it proper attention, not in my overall briefing. LTSM, I want to apologize to the committee. The manager for LTSM had a major problem last night and is not here, because that's another area we know is of interest, and therefore I will present in that area. What we're reporting on is both our monitoring as well as our monitoring of what's happening in the schools. As you know, workbooks we're responsible to, I mean for, and workbook one, which is used in the first two terms, is in place in all of the schools. When you see the less than 100%, that's not about delivery at schools, but we always add an additional 3% for each province, and those are to manage shortages that occur when schools open because of the unpredictability of the actual numbers that you will get when you open. And that's the delivery status of workbook two. Again, the same story. That has gone fairly well, as well as grade R workbooks. Those are managed at DBE level. I will not go through, Chair, the budget, but you've got the budget. We've got a breakdown, and it's contained in the slides that you have of the breakdown between textbooks and stationery. Gauteng doesn't do that breakdown. We have a single budget for both textbooks and stationery. I just wanted to speak to this slide, because the issue of books, you know, LTSM, the ones that are ordered at provincial level, that's where we have most of the challenges. Now, in the Eastern Cape, we are still, and these are top-up textbooks, we are still around 42% delivered. And the issue that happened here was that the HOD, the new head of department, when he came in, he decided to take a step back and ask for a quick assessment of the textbooks that are available in schools, because what he was concerned with was that the same schools were ordering the same number of textbooks and being provided yearly, and he felt that it was like a bottomless pit, and he wanted to know where the book had gone. And therefore it slowed us down a bit, but it has managed to identify some books that were there, you know, that had not been accounted for, some not very effective retrieval systems, but they are hoping that now delivery will be concluded by the 28th of February. Free State has done well, and the other province that I want to go to, which has had problems around books, although with textbooks it was mainly the Eastern
not acceptable in Zimbabwe, but that's what the delivery status looks like currently. For stationery, stationery has largely gone well, except for Limpopo. The challenge in the Eastern Cape that there is now, the 100% that I'm reporting on are those schools that were part of the of central procurement. There were schools that opted not to be part of the central procurement. And in those schools, there has been a lag in terms of stationery being available, but they were not part of the central procurement of the department. However, working with the new SD in the province, these schools are being paid attention to. In particular, schools, you know, where you visited, I know that the committee went to the northern areas in Port Elizabeth, and there we have had some challenge again around this area, and currently delivering the 26% in that area. SEP literature, the literature that's being delivered now is new, is new set work as advised by Umanisi, because we're using the same set work for a long time, and that's where we currently stand with the delivery status of the literature textbooks. Chair, if I may just say, around this area of NPSM, the main challenges were in three provinces. Firstly, in Limpopo, the challenge was that there was no transversal tender, in particular around the stationery. And therefore, they were not part of that, and the department, which had followed its own tender processes, struggled, and the DBE had to go in and assist, and we completed that by the 12th of December. That has assisted so that the stationery was in place by the end of January. In the Eastern Cape, as I've said, it was the directive of the HOD to first ascertain what was in the school before distributing yet again to schools that may have the books. And in the Free State, the Free State was experiencing budgetary challenges, and therefore the orders were placed late, and the distribution was not at the same level at the same time. I will skip infrastructure, or perhaps let me at this point, so that I don't speak too much all at once, let me ask my colleague, Mr. Mahlangu, to speak on the issues of teachers. And we will then move to the infrastructure and ask Mrs. Mamatuba to do that, and we continue the presentation.
As you can see, there's a summary of the issues around cost provisioning in all the provinces. But I'm going to focus on my notes here just to go through the key issues. Ms. Chobega has said, the focus for cost provisioning is to ensure that there's a teacher in class on the first day of schooling. Now, this is what we are trying to improve as the national office, to assist the provinces to ensure that it happens. And as you will read there, you will see provinces are at the different levels. The main milestone that we look at is to ensure that by 30 September, all the schools will receive their letters of how many schools they are going to have. That is then the trigger that will ensure that all the other processes, including the identification of and profiling of vacancies, the identification of teachers declared in excess and their profiling, and the issuing of letters to those teachers so that on the first day they move to a new school. Now, provinces are at different levels. As you can see, the Western Cape, by the 1st of January, all the teachers that were supposed to be moved to another school were already moved. As you know, before that process happens, you cannot fill in the vacancies that were identified in September. So what we are trying to do is to ensure that those vacancies that were identified in September are filled on the first day of school, so that the focus can be on the rest of the vacancies that occur during to occur in terms of your normal attrition process. Now we have as you will see, I think in this slide here, the schools that we visited, 99.2 had received their post establishment by 16 September. It's only one, Mpumalanga, which delayed due to the challenges that due to the dispute that the union raised regarding the reduction of the number of posts. And then I'm going to focus on these four provinces, Northwest, Limpopo, KZN, and Eastern Cape, where currently, in terms of the start of the year, they had not identified the excess educators due to the issues around the disputes that were raised by the union and other social partners, for instance, the SGB group. In the Northwest, the process is underway. They started filling the post because around the 15th of January, the dispute was around whether the province will move the educators in terms of the new resolution, which says the province can move at the minimum only once in 3 years. This is to ensure that the annual disruption in terms of the movement of educators is limited. In Limpopo, the dispute that was raised was that the unions demanded that the province fills the promotional post first, and then that has also been resolved due to the intervention of the premier. In KZN, all the processes were completed as and when the teachers were supposed to move, a dispute was raised. There also the HOD intervened, and then it was decided that a closed vacancy bulletin will be released so that teachers can apply, teachers that are interested can apply. In the Eastern Cape, it was a dispute regarding the movement of excesses. There also the HOD intervened. What happens in the Eastern Cape is that it was decided that while the dispute around the movement of excess educators is being resolved, critical posts such as mathematics, science, and Africans in some areas are filled immediately with Funza Lushaka and other new applicants. Because in any way, even in the list of excesses, you might not even find those. So dealt with the interventions from the HOD list. So, in summary, then the issues, the challenges regarding with ensuring that the teacher and staff by the start of the school year were in these premises, not just in Kopa and KZN, but the placement is currently happening by using the Fundo Lushaka graduates to fill the critical post or the testing post. Just to summarize the interventions, what we have agreed with the province is that because the post-provisioning process, once the MEC declares the post-establishment, is taken over by the negotiators and consults, but it has been decided that the HOD or the MEC, when necessary, should intervene, particularly in provinces that we know have a difficult relationship between the unions and the and the department, KZN, Limpopo, and Eastern Cape. The HOD or the MEC intervene sooner, and we are also focusing on lesson learning, because one advantage of having all the nine provinces implementing the same policy is that we can learn lessons from the Western Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, and Free State in terms of how they successfully implement the same policy without any challenges. So we will facilitate that from the national. We also have strengthened the monitoring of the implementation of the policies in terms of the technical aspects, including whether the same factors are being used, but also the issue of the time frames to ensure that all provinces implement within the time frames, but also the processes, because we believe those are distractions in that we are not able to focus on things like teacher shortages and lesson size, because the simple process of implementation has been the issue in some provinces. So we are focusing on that to ensure that all provinces are at the level of Western Cape, Gauteng, and the Free State, for instance, so that the focus can be on those rural areas where teachers the strike is for teachers, and in length and style. We also looking at the new agreement that was reached in the National Education Labor Relations Council is that in order to reduce the annual movement, the annual disruption with the movement of teachers, the employer will assess if there's a need. And there would be some provinces which are relatively stable, like Mpumalanga, where actually you don't need to move educators annually, because there's no inflow from other provinces, like in the Western Cape and Gauteng. That will assist then in making sure that by the first of the beginning of the year, all posts are filled and they are ready to go. Yeah, I think that's the summary.
Thank you. We're going to ask the infrastructure team to take us through the infrastructure slide.
Provide 229 schools with sanitation projects with the barrier.
Gauteng, it's more because there were a school that were identified after the targets had been submitted and which were agents, and they had to address them. KZN had 214 projects, 195 already provided, 19 is still in the implementation. Limpopo had 210, 158 has been provided, and they're left with 52. MP, they've got 125, they've provided 79, 46 are still outstanding. Northern Cape, they've got, they targeted 41, provided 14, and 27 is still outstanding. Northern Northwest, they targeted 11, they've provided 15. The same case with Gauteng, they identified a school that were agents and they had to address them. The same with Western Cape, they targeted 10, but they provided more than the targets. So under water projects, the targets for Eastern Cape is 170. They managed to do 256, which was more. So this 256 were the schools, additional schools that were additionally identified after the target has been submitted to the minister. The Free State targeted 9. They also managed to provide 49, which is more than the target, due to challenges that the province had, so they had to address those schools because you can't have a school running without water. Gauteng, they don't have programs for schools that are without water. All their schools have got water. KZN, they targeted 425 schools. They have managed to provide more than the target. As you know, that currently we've got problems with water. So where there was agent need, provinces managed to provide more than the target. Limpopo also is the same thing. When when we received the plans on the targets, all schools, it was reported that they got access to water, but then due to drought, they had to add those water that were, those schools that were agent, which were 105 schools. That is why the variance is over 100. Mpumalanga targeted 54. They provided 47, 7 is still outstanding. Northern Cape, their target is 75, they provided 54, 21 is still outstanding. Northwest also, they targeted 5, they gave more, which is 7, more by 2. And then Western Cape also, when they provided their list, there was no school without water, but later on they established the need in 4 schools and they provided those schools. And then under electrification, the target for Eastern Cape, it was 105. They managed to provide 253. This includes the schools that were also vandalized. The province managed to provide electrification. That is why the number is high. And then Free State is 48. They provided 40. 8 is still remaining. Gauteng, they don't have problem with electrification. All schools have got access to electricity. KZN, they targeted 75. However, they managed to give 91. 16 schools more when you look at the targets. Limpopo also, at the time when they submitted their plans, it was, the target was 5, but later on 5 schools were identified, which they provided. Mpumalanga provided, identified 19, but later on other schools, due to vandalism, were identified and they managed to provide more than the target. Northern Cape, they've got 48, they only managed to provide 4. 44 still outstanding. Northwest had 1, however they provided 2, which was identified later on. Western Cape don't have challenges with electrification, all the schools have got access to electricity. And then we look at new and replacement at schools. We are the new schools. They did not target anything under replacement school. They targeted 27, of which 8 were completed. We look at Free State total, including the new and replacement, is 8 schools. 3 were completed in Gauteng. They targeted 9. 4 were completed to date. In KZN, it's 11. 7 completed. In Limpopo, target is 13. 2 completed. In Mpumalanga, 12. 4 completed. Northern Cape, 3. 1 completed. Northwest, 12. And 2 completed. And Western Cape, 11. 7 completed. All in all, we had 106 schools that were targeted and only 38 were delivered. We are at 36%. And then project implementation of all the projects, including the one that I've presented, including maintenance. In total, we had 8753 projects. And then the number that was delivered to date is 4569. And then number of projects in the implementation is 4,184. And then according to the stages, number of projects in planning stage, it's 541. Tender stage is 5644. Those that are at between 1 and 50% completed, they are 453. Those at 51 to 71% completed, they are at 930. And then the ones between 70 to 100% completed is 1419. And the projects that are on hold, the total is 197. And then with regards to maintenance, the project under maintenance, we had 3,392. And then with the budget of 12, and then we can see that the total budget of maintenance vis-a-vis the total budget, Eastern Cape has budgeted 13%, Free State 16%, Gauteng 11%, KZN 9%, Limpopo 1%, Mpumalanga 11%, Northern Cape 9%, and then Northwest 16%, and Western Cape 35%. Expenditure to date, vis-a-vis the budget for maintenance, Eastern Cape is at 37%, Free State 11%, Gauteng 70%, KZN, they are over their budget of maintenance, which is at 155%, Limpopo 69%, Mpumalanga 49%, Northern Cape 75%, Northwest 31%, and Western Cape at 90%. In overall, expenditure is at 74%. And then we've got food, school furniture. Just before I indicate this, the two provinces where information is not available, these are the two provinces where school furniture is decentralized to districts. We are still working with the two departments to get information from different districts. With school furniture, the total number shortages per province, Eastern Cape identified 845 schools, and then the number of units, 134, planned 845, and the number of units that we have provided is 166. When you look at the number of the schools that were planned vis-a-vis the number of schools that have received, it's 861, which is more. So this includes even the new ACD schools that are part of replacement school. That is why the number is high. In Gauteng, they've got the total number of schools we serve with shortages of furniture, and majority of these are top-ups. It's 945. The quantities that are total number of schools that are planned is 384, the limit is 22,000, and at third quarter, they have managed to deliver furniture to 266 schools. The actual unit delivered is 60,000. Limpopo had 1040 schools that are without, with shortage of furniture. The number of units that are required is 161, and then 497 were planned, and the number of units is 98. To date, they have delivered to 425 and 59 units, 59,000 units were planned. Okay, so when we look even in Gauteng, however, the numbers and even in Western Cape, when you look at those numbers, the province has indicated that by the end of the third quarter, they will be in a position to even supply to more than the number of schools that they have indicated. And then maybe to touch on Mela Transport, which is not part of the presentation. We have the need for Mela Transport. We've got 524,000 Mela that needed transport. And then for this financial year, we targeted 420, but at the end of the third quarter, we were able to transport 444, which means of the need, we have transported 86. We can also record that it is an improvement when we compare it to the other years. And then for this financial year, we've got three provinces that have got 100% coverage, which is Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape. And then we've got two provinces at 91%, which is Free State and Limpopo. And Eastern Cape and KZN are still providing Mela Transport to ranging from 63% to 67%. However, there is an improvement in the number of learners that are transported based on the number of needs that were submitted to the department. And we know that there are still those needs that are not captured for this financial year, which are for this financial year. And those are the new needs. But based on this, we are covering 85-86%.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to say, those were the four basic areas that we think are important for the opening of schools, which included your admission, your LCSM, your teacher provisioning, and basic infrastructure, which are at the core. We do, however, and we'll try not to take too much time on this, we do think that in the past the committee has shown an interest in progressed learners, and we decided to look at that as well as part of management and how we get started, because this is an area that has caused quite a lot of controversy in the country, but also has been of major interest. This is what currently our numbers look like of progressed learners in the system. And we believe that those numbers, even where they are increasing, we'd like to see them decrease, but we think that the policy is beginning to be implemented as was envisaged. There is a better understanding of the policy and who is targeted to be progressed. But that's currently where we are. These are preliminary statistics. So if we come at a later date with slightly revised numbers, please bear with us. What we have also done, because we thought you wouldn't just be interested in the numbers, but in what the strategies everywhere are for supporting the progressed learners. Our presentation here then looks at the strategies for supporting progressed learners. They differ slightly from province to province, but in all of the provinces, there is a
all the progress levels that have been identified, in the, all of them will track quarterly the performance of the learners. But depending on the province, some of them will then organize subject clinics, as is the case in the Eastern Cape, or as in the Free State, they've gone into, you know, internet broadcast programs, I mean, those lessons, and they've looked at all progress learners as well as learners who have achieved levels 1 and 2 in your high enrollment subjects. So, I mean, the holiday camps run through all of them. In housing, there's the issue of the secondary school intervention programs. The strategies that they use there are used much more strongly also with progress learners. In Limpopo, the focus has been more on the people who support the learners, your subject advisors and teachers, your school-based support team, and then in Mpumalanga, it's learner camps for selected progress and repeating learners. The information is in the presentation, so I won't go through it line by line. Suffice to say, we now have the numbers. We are working with individual provinces to look at what their strategies are to support learners at all levels. Chair, overall then, there were things that came out from individual provinces. Just to say, in the Eastern Cape, as you would have picked up, the issue has really been around the vacancies which the new SG has taken in hand, and those have been dealt with. In the Free State, the issue has been pressure around those schools that performed very well, and that has resulted in shortages in LTSM and furniture and other issues, but it was mainly those schools that did extremely well. In housing, it was the high volumes of applications, as we said earlier. But what Gauteng has also done, which is something that I didn't talk about here, I mean, Edith spoke to it slightly, the issue of building of new schools where there is real areas of pressure. And Gauteng has gone into that, and they built 9 new schools. But there's also focus on the issue of special schools. And Chair, we would like to ask that at a future date we come and present much more clearly on the issues around special schools, because when you talk of long lines of admissions, that's an area of focus, and we would like to come and present much more substantively on that area. In KwaZulu-Natal, the issue again was shortages in LTSM and this question of getting all substantive posts filled. There were challenges, but again, Mr. Matlangu presented in the area. In Limpopo, as we indicated, the issue of the stationary tender was a problem. And in some subjects with top-ups, the books were not delivered. And those were the areas that we're focusing on. And the continued community protests in Limpopo have been a problem. And when we opened, there were 2 schools in Kukuli that where the community was demanding new school buildings, but the 42 schools in there that were impacted upon, it was the community demanding a tarred road, which had nothing to do with education, but that's an issue that continues to blog us. In Mpumalanga, learner transport in Lagatrali and Bakkerspoon was an issue, but having considered where their pressure points were, they opened 3 new schools in the province, in Gandala and in Mutabe. In Northern Cape, Namakwa is struggling with attracting suitably qualified teachers, but the area that has pressure with admissions is John Taulo High School, because of the issue of town. And I think what is important also is just to, yeah. So the province did look at issues of mobile classrooms. In Northwest, the issue was contracts for temporary teachers that had not been extended. Those were foreign teachers, mainly, that were not renewed. Those have since been renewed. But in Northwest as well, we think sanitation and weather furniture continue to be an issue that needs to be addressed. In Western Cape, we still had unplaced learners, as we explained, and the furniture that's a challenge in Western Cape is more furniture for teachers and for libraries, your library tables. Chair, I will not go through the findings of and the visits of the visits by the parliamentarians, but to say that we've got a report which we will be sending to you that says specifically details what we've done with each of your findings, the responses, because we've been working with provinces and the responses are there. But I will not go through that at this point, but we will provide it in writing. Just final comments around the issue of school readiness is firstly to say that we were really quite pleased with the high level visibility of public representatives across the country. And their input has been very invaluable, and we try to factor them in the responses that we are providing. We are following up, and as I've said, we do have the documentation on each single school that was visited, what the findings were, what the status of resolving those issues are, which we can make available. But some of the areas that we think we need to look at probably differently in this area. One is a focus beyond the processes, perhaps. Process is very important about your PTM declarations and all of that. But we think there hasn't been sufficient focus on the classroom. Is there a teacher for that class for each subject? And we want to shift this to looking more into that. Do we have these people in the classroom? The second area is I get a focus not only on what has been ordered by schools, either as top-ups or anything else, but on the commitment that we have made as a department on universal coverage, which comes up when you talk about issues of PIMS, because the lack of those books in front of children in their hands impacts on their delivery. And therefore, what we want to strengthen our monitoring on, particularly as the year starts, is whether, in fact, children do have textbooks, not how much we've delivered, but whether each child has a textbook for the subject that they have to present. And lastly, we think that the issue of water and sanitation, which was presented on right now, still remains a major issue, and just to ensure that, to ensure our children's dignity, that will be safe in all schools. And Chairperson, that was on school readiness, and I'll be guided by you. What we then put in at the request of the DG, because it's an area that he believes that the committee has expressed interest in, is the issue of the second transmission process. That's an overview. Chair Peterson, then I can step off.
For 2017, we will
modularized in 2016, as well as those writing the independent certificates, and then in phase three, those upgrading or completing the NSCs for both phase two and three, our face-to-face classroom board is of course provided. For 2017, the package of support includes print face-to-face broadcast, which is both radio and TV, and online digital support, and this is then just a list of all the different types of support that we're providing. In addition, this year we will provide textbooks that are DBE only, which is the math and science textbooks, and the diagnostic reports that were done at the end of last year after the exams have been divided into the 11 subjects that we're providing support for, so that learners can actually have these to be able to prepare for exams. And then we've also developed tips for exam preparation, because we found that a lot of learners simply need a little bit more advice and tips to prepare for exams in order for them to pass. We also developed revision booklets, and these booklets focus on helping these learners who have not performed or struggled to pass 40% that they can work through them and at least achieve the first part of it is 40, and then the next part of it is another 20%, so that at least they would have mastered 60% of the content they need to pass. We will, in during the course of this year, prepare the second book, which will cover the next 20% to 80% and then to 100%. In terms of the face-to-face classes, as indicated, we provide phase two and three. We're providing support to 11 subjects at 50 venues, and each venue will have two teachers and a center manager, and we'll provide 30 hours per phase. The broadcast, we're busy also developing content for television. And these will be available on the Mindset channel, on the HD OpenView, as well as on the DSTV channel. They are being offered as we speak, and the schedules have been uploaded for the preparation for the supplementary exams. Going forward, the new material that's being developed will include subtitling for those learners that that would not qualify for the NSC from special school, and we're also looking into sign language interpretation. In terms of the IBP and telematics, these
I'm very sorry to disturb you. Please forgive me, but I'd just like to take up something with the chairperson if you don't mind. Chairperson, 10 to 12. We still have another presentation to get to on the one. The meeting schedule finished at half past 12. I don't see how we're going to get through this at the pace that we're going if we continue in this way, and I'd like your intervention, please, because we still need an opportunity to ask questions. The most important thing in these meetings is the opportunity we get to have a discussion and an engagement with the department. Because, you know, we get these presentations a couple of days before, so we've read all of this stuff. So to sit here for hours and hours just to be read out the same thing that we've already read ourselves, it's frankly a waste of time, and it's quite patronizing, to be honest. The real value of this meeting is the engagement, but we're packing the meeting with being read to by the department. Please can we rather have an engagement with the department, because that is really what we're here to do. And at the rate we're going, we're not going to be we're not going to be able to have that engagement. We've only got 40 minutes left of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're busy now at the moment also with the radio broadcast, and then we have the online package that is provided. This is just a provincial breakdown of the split of the 50 venues. In terms of face-to-face classes, I've already indicated what it is that we're doing. In terms of face-to-face venues, you have then the list of all of them. I'd like to mention that we are still waiting for the venues for Western Cape. In terms of the multimedia broadcast, which I've also alluded to, this is the venues and the venue for the television broadcast, which is on the OpenView HD, are also listed. In terms of the digital online, we are providing content on our website as well as the DB Cloud. These are then just the links where you can access them. And then in terms of the access for the internet, we're working with Mzansi Online Project to be able to provide access as well as the NYDA internet cafes, the Vodacom centers, the Song centers, etc. The print resources, I've also already outlined the different resources that we will be providing and how they can assist. We've had activation sessions in all 9 provinces, and we have received very positive feedback regarding that. In terms of the registration, then learners register at the district offices, and they then provided with information in terms of where they can access the internet. Thank you.
But the majority of schools that were damaged were in Boronga 2. At the beginning of the year, there were new areas in Lembe, which then again started with the services that were in Jebele West, Sokusese, Sultansberg, and Hlanganani. Okay, I find it's important to just do that and to show those, all of those circuits come from the district called Lembe. Lembe is the biggest district in Limpopo and is the best performing in the province. However, if you look at the history of performance between 2014 and 2016 in the province, you will see that Lembe has been going down every single year. Okay, the others have been going down as well. But what's important is that they were affected both years. In 2014, it was Malamulele. Malamulele was a problem for them, and all their resources were taken to Malamulele. Malamulele topped the province in terms of performance, but then they and the district went down. Same thing last year, it was Buwani. All the resources were taken to Buwani. Buwani topped the performance in terms of circuit. Then May and the district went down. And to contextualize, Buwani last year presented 2,000 candidates in the trip as a second, as against 26,000 that were presented by them as a whole. And we thought this is what, I won't go through their actual performances, the schools in Boronga 1 and Boronga 2, safe to say what has become clear is that because the district every time runs to the areas that are affected, they take all their resources, it impacts on the overall performance, on the ability of the district to perform. And they have asked this year, that was when we requested, when we got the request from the portfolio committee to update, one of the things they asked us to say is that could they please be allowed, as is the decision level taken by the province, not to over-focus on Buwani, and focus on Buwani as they are focusing on and that, you know, what they can report is that all of the students while you have received stationery, that all promotional posts have been filled and substitute teacher posts filled as well. Their concern is that, as I already said at the beginning of the year, new sectors were beginning to start with challenges, and they made it very clear that they also want the attention that they're given to the one. So, Chair, basically we are asking that we give an update on the one as we give an update on the problem and all the issues, and not single out the one because it does seem to be having unintended and not so positive consequences. Thank you very much, Chair. I think that's the extent of our briefing on the one.
Has gone out, but I will now take this opportunity to ask the members, let's take this document as not a, you know, independent presentation, because they all fit into one area, which is school readiness. And I think that the fact that Buwani has been brought here, it's specifically because of the reasons that we all know what happened in Wuhan last year. So I think it will be very interesting. We thought that it would be very interesting for the committee to be appraised about the development in that area. Because we can't keep it like water under the bridge. So I'll take this opportunity to give the members the time to reflect on the presentation. We'll take the second round after that if there are follow-ups, and then we'll proceed in that session. But members, please let's know the fact that this committee meeting is not the first and the last opportunity for us to interact with the department. The department has got an open door for you. You can call them and ask specific line directors or chief director to give us information as to whatever issues you might be having that you want to raise with them. They've got a liaison officer who's based here with us all the time. So I think it would be appropriate for us to know that we are operating under limited time and we cannot exhaust everything in one meeting. So over to you members, can you interact with Parabet, Honorable Bishop, Honorable Barton, Honorable Ibuli, in that order, Honorable Davis will be the last.
Chair and also thank you to the department for the presentation. I'm just going to start with the issue of learner transport. You're saying that we have 524,000 learners who need transport, and 420,000 have already been, they actually were targeted, and 444,000 were provided to with their transport. Recently, we went to Chief Mwenyama to give a school in the Ilembe district in Kibirene, and where we were told that there are people that start walking to school at 3:30 in the morning because they have to walk a 10-kilometer distance to get to the school. And also, it was also mentioned that if they were to get a bus, the bus would actually take 20 kilometers because walking is 10 kilometers, but then the bus would be 20 kilometers. So I just want to know, like, you know, when it comes to targeting, the schools, which, how do you manage, how do you get to this targeting of the schools, like to say, because I would think that Chief Mwenyama Technical School should have been one of the schools that were actually targeted amongst the ones that were targeted. And then when going to the school finisher, I didn't hear you talk about the MOU that has been signed with schools to ensure that finisher is being declared. new replace and replacement of schools. Eastern Cape, particularly, they have about 800 schools which are built of inappropriate material and need replacement. Yet the province underspends dramatically on its school infrastructure plans. And also, the target of the students, only 30% of the target, they managed to be able to deliver the school. So it's only 30% of the target. I think it was 8, and they were only able to deliver about 2 schools. What are you doing about that? And you know, are we going to see a bit of intervention in terms of assisting them to be able to spend the budget that's been allocated for them? And the basic service project. Also, the one school that we went to also in Igambe District, whereby the school depends on rainwater in Riverton. But I see we have a variance of money and talented professors. So I just want to find out if you have a variance of 146, why there are schools that depend on rainwater still. And also, you know, the how do you, when you say that you have a school that's got water, what is it that we're expecting also the rainwater to be part of a school that you say, okay, if they receive rainwater, then they have school. Then they have water, you know, they have water allocation. I don't know if this is a question. With regards to the vacancies, we have, you know, the, what do you call it, the bursary holders who have completed, I presume, like at the beginning of the year. I just want to know how many have completed the ones that are allocated the bursary, and also how many are they all got replaced, and amongst them, how many do we have that are meant, that have meant, that have been meant.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's clear from this presentation that schools monitored are definitely not in the extreme rural areas. Because if you go into these areas, you will see that they are lacking seriously, and it needs to be addressed, because we cannot go into the future with our learners not being provided with the necessary resources. You speak of Gauteng and Western Cape being the provinces that have the majority of unplaced learners. And I think you should start looking at solutions for that. It's because of the urbanization, because the rural schools are not being attended to. So please, do not always bring to this portfolio the figures of unplaced learners. Look for the solution. It's time that this department started building schools. You speak of delivering a school a week. We haven't seen a report from that for quite some time. And then, Ms. Mugwetha, thank you very much for alluding to of the pens and pencils given to them is hopeless. They then have to use their meager budgets to purchase or ask the parents to provide education for the children. In some of the schools in Mpumalanga, in this one district, they haven't had top-ups for 4 years. Certain schools, grade 10 and 12, maths and science, have no textbooks. And that's also for 4 years. Teachers are at schools providing subjects like engineering graphics, but they don't provide maths. You cannot take the subject if you have no maths background. So that needs to be addressed as well. Another big problem is pit the cleans. When are they going to be eradicated? Because you speak about flush toilets and water and all these type of things. It is not available in our rural schools. In Mpumalanga, again, I'm alluding to that province, schools are delivered, water is delivered to the schools once a week. And then you have a learner enrollment of 1,600 learners at schools. And it's a tank, 10 kilometers. It's not sufficient. Then you have schools where teachers have to share the toilets with learners. 600 learners in the school, 4 toilets for girls, 4 toilets for boys, in a shocking position. So, coming back to what I said in the beginning, the department doesn't make a visit to our extreme rural areas. And then if I can just refer you to slide 27, you say here that mitigating strategies can only realize the school principals report their shortages. What do you do to principals that do not report these shortages? And then while we're speaking on shortages, there are some schools in Mpumalanga that sit with excess teachers. Why have these teachers not been deployed? Your report just now spoke of everything from days, excess teachers have been deployed, etc., etc. It is not fair because you're competing on other schools that have vacancies. Another problem that we picked up is the tranches, the budgetary tranches. Received too late. Some schools receive it in May. I mean, that's 6 months, 5 months down the line. If you're a quintile 1-3 school, you cannot only receive your tranche in May. The department must look at getting the tranches through to the schools earlier on. And then slide 27, if I can take it to the last paragraph. The only means of addressing shortages is if government sets up a warehouse to be stocked with textbooks for such a purpose, a requirement that has huge budget implications. Now, what is more important to you, your budgetary implications or the well-being of the learner? We must weigh these two up. And, as I said, maths and science books haven't been delivered to secondary schools in the U.S.
Do you have time frames that you have have been mentioned that there are schools that are still having unqualified educators, of which we noted that the rural area is where bulk of unqualified teachers lie. The proposal of incentives, of which these incentives seem as if they are not working or they are not being monitored how the province sees these incentives. What plans do we have to attract teachers? Because most of the schools will report that teachers, they get teachers, they stay only a week, they go because of certain factors like resources, like transport, like accommodation, and so on that they do. Well, how do we assist those schools? Because really, most of the areas and schools that are affected with these unqualified teachers are big schools that are rural. Let us, okay, infrastructure. I noticed that most of the provinces that are so rural provinces, like KZN, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo, are well covered according to this page 80 presentation. They have even a barrier of so many sanitation, so many water supply, so many electricity. Is this a really a true reflection, as one has said, is what is happening? Is it a true reflection of what is happening on the rural areas of our provinces, that there's such a disadvantage as compared the oversight that we have. And also on infrastructure, sharing resources. You know, I have noted that in furniture, when Mama Tuba was presenting, Mrs. Mama Tuba was presenting, notice that there are schools that are being making lots of different types of furniture. And through our oversight, we notice that there are schools that are oversupplied. Do we monitor these allocations of resources when we supply these schools that we can reshuffle? Take for example the school that we visited, the last one in Gandhi Residential. The school, just in one area, there's a school on that is what running short of furniture. Children were overcrowded. Are there good new schools but without furniture? Just a few kilometers from that school, and the school, the primary school, that has lots and lots of desks and tables stored, oversupplied. So we even saw the problem of the demand on the spot when we visited that school. Do the provinces, when flagging or identifying these schools as schools in supply, in shortage, do they first do the what check with other schools that they have supplied that? Instead of noticed that somewhere in your presentation you said children should use place more special on second chance, should begin from certain nearest district institution that is similar. Whereas you will notice that second chance children, students or learners are registered in PZ committees and calling themselves that they are second chance. I noticed that because we have noted a lot of students that in a college sixth young, yet is Western Cape, but they say it's for the second chance. I don't know where the confusion lies, because they are coming all the way from Northern Cape to be in Sitrasdal. It's a small town, about 200 kilometers from Cape Town. They are kept there for the second chance. And there's some claim that I can do this subject for 2 years. I don't know what is happening there. And if we can just check if it's of support in the centers and explain to the learners what is the difference between the second chance, the process, and PZs who are class colleges. Last case on the warning problem. And I would like us to know, is the department also involved in the beginning of the year? We noticed that there are also schools that are inventing that in the whole area. Is it the same area, one area? What are you doing there to engage schools? Because since this is now a session to end the school, so that's important to be thinking about the families. Thank
you. Thank you. An issue of the school in one of the constituencies. There is a critical incident in the subject. In, I don't know, like the 2014 or early 2015, up until today, the school by that person was getting paid. So I think the department did not respond, to this. I think I must put my dissatisfaction on the table. I repeat, a 25 has not been a school. Late, is it late 2014 or early 2015, up until today, a 25. And the answer that I got through that letter was that the school or the parents or the SGB did not accept the principal was changed. The principal was changed away from the school. The question still stands. If we have been interviewed by the same SGB, we have been interviewed by the same SGB, how come the same SGBs are not wanting? It's a problem. It's a very real problem. And how did you get payment or salary? Because according to the form, I think it's age 9, I forgot to say it's age 9, indicates that even the SGB must sign there that you commence as a particular school. If it did not commence, that particular school, how come the principal is paid? For almost 24 months, and I'm told the person is still reporting to the second, which I know. I went there, it's not school. I went to check there, it's not school. Then the question is, do you have authority over the school? I repeat, it's in Mpumalanga, Gerrit Sibande, Mpulu is the second. The school is Isobane Primary School. I'm not happy at all. Even if you take the department, you go down there, drive don't only rely on the reports. Sometimes the reports will be with the speech. Drive there, interview the school, and so forth, like I did. Interview those people. I'm not talking from, you know, we took an old chapter. I'm not talking lightly. You see, we took the old, so that we make sure that these things are happening there. Remember, people on the ground are talking the truth. What you say on top here, we say here, it's nothing. People on the ground. Please go to the Atlanta school, look at the school, you get the facts, you interview parents, you interview even children, you interview, you go to the principal, you go to the second manager, because that's where they collude, the second manager. The second is even in the Eastern Cape, the Peter Maris, the PD, where we went to. I found the same story in January, where a second manager was defending her stance to say why an HOD was not employed, saying that person did not have proper qualification, they are still interviewing those qualifications. I don't know which departmental official I was making. I will remember the school later on. The person said that person did not have qualification. My question was, hey, this person applied, you did shortlisting right from the province down to the region, down to the school. The person has been there qualified as a teacher there for 3, 4, 5 years, and then now that is applying for a high promotional post. Now you are saying the person does not have qualification. How did he pass all those processes? I had a problem now, I know. Because there's a problem here. Remember, those people think they own those offices. No one is owning offices. These are department of state offices. Please investigate those things. Even in that one, I don't remember, Jefferson, I must say, I don't remember the name of the school in the Eastern Cape, where we went with the in that district. Where we went, I will pass that name immediately. I get the actual name. I want to find out whether that those who instructed these people know. Please, that HOD must be, because good number one, everyone was saying that. That person, position one, and so on. Even that school, that's the one I'm talking about, they twisted all the results, because they took the advantage that people were not educated. They twisted everything, and they put position two instead of position one, and everything stopped. I know exactly what happened. I said that I'm telling you. Please, man. These people are still crying. The person who has been helping them does not get anything for that matter. It does not get them in the compensation for acting the school in that particular school. The person who's supposed to be there is not there. The issue of the reopening of schools, I'm not also here. You know, there's been a strike in Mpumalanga, Ehlanzeni district, because there's a cry that temporary teachers have not been paid for a long period of time. Long period of time. You will find that there's a problem somewhere, the person holding all those forms. But schools did not start the real time when we wanted them to go. And how do you do the management of foreign teachers? How do you do that management? You know, they know these people, especially in Kumala. They know that they have foreign teachers, and the Lafunza and Shara kids, they have to come in there. You see? And then when come January, those people are told to go home. No one is in there. No one is in to feed the kids. Whereas we say there should be a teaching on the first day. How can you be taught if there's no one in front of the venue? In the issue of governance, I don't know. I don't know what's happening in governance. I don't know, maybe we should intensify these workshops. The schools I visited in St. Kate, Pumala, same thing. A school taking the work of, I raised that thing last week, I must emphasize it this week, until it comes correct. They don't know their duties. SMT members, the principal is staying there, just looking at the SGBs, they are collecting school fees. They hold all the checks. you start to wonder what's really happening there. What's really happening here? They chase away teachers that have been employed by the SGB. You see, they say, no, you're not the one needed here. Says, SMC is quiet. I said, no, there's a problem here. Go to Barberton High School, Barberton Secondary School, you'll see what I'm talking about. On the issue of Barberton, the MGO, Bamhola High School, Amhola High School, same Barberton issues. The second manager is holding all the checks are with him, Mr. Brown. The checks are with the second manager. When asked, we have dissolved the SGB. When was that? Almost 5 months ago. Ah! 5 months ago, what have you been doing all these months without setting up the SGB? In fact, who's responsible for running the school? Is it you or the principal? Is it you or the president? But the building is holding. Even the district knows about this. Nothing's happening. That's why I'm questioning your authority. How is your authority? When you speak, do you speak fire? Or you're just putting water, even a drop of water, even not even the leaf, water? Let me stop there. I'm not happy with furniture. You know, when we come here, you tell us, can we be given, if the province says we have delivered a school furniture, can we be given the names of the school where furniture have been delivered? You, and how many, so that, and then also even the phone number of those schools, so that we can check with the principals. If you get one, you can spot check. We do spot checks. Because I'm not here, I'm not saying schools don't get those furniture. They don't have them. They don't have those furniture, but here, yeah, I finish it. I'm happy the way you are doing ESAMS. ESAMS here is very powerful. You've got all the reports, everything is there. I checked it, the SAMS. I went to the school, can you show me, is the SAMS still the way it is? I said, oh, there are still other additional features that are there in SAMS. I was very happy. But I'm not happy with the way you are doing the annual survey. Can we improve on the annual survey? You can't ask a person to fill something that you know. Isn't it the SAMS has got everything? Names of teachers, names of teachers, qualification of teachers, everything, toilets that are needed. But when the annual survey comes, you still ask the same thing that is in SAMS. They are supposed to be three there. Instead of saying, okay, we give you the well-filled paper, if any information has changed, just indicate next door this information has changed. If we can improve on that thing, I might be happy. And then the issue, can I appraise here? How many toilets per learner, how many learners should, okay, how many, how can I put this thing? How, the ratio of the toilet, so that we can know, 30 is to 1, is to 1, 10 is to 1, so the ratio, if we can know the ratio, because everyone now, you know, when there's a lot of money, there's disaster. All schools will see that they are building toilets. What are the toilets for? What are these toilets for? What? Yes, we have to go to the toilet. But we're not giving to go to the toilet. You know, it's not that we're giving it. We need the gist of the thing. If we can be appraised, when they do this, no. Can you go and check and stop this thing? This man must be diabetic or something else. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to say, as I'm about to speak, it's just struck 12:30, which is precisely the time you said that we'd be wrapping up, but clearly we're not. And I don't want to lay the blame at your feet, Chairperson, because you weren't in control of this particular agenda. But it is very clear to me that you're trying to pack too much into our meeting, and I think it's a big problem, because it means that we start to self-censor, because we're worried that we can't raise certain issues because we're going to run out of time. So I just want to make that point again, to make it very loudly and clearly, and perhaps when we meet the committee next time, we can work out a way to avoid this. I just want to support very, very strongly what my colleague, the Honourable Nguni, is saying about the different picture that we see on the ground compared to the stats that you give us. And in fact, I remember the same thing last year. The stats that we see on your PowerPoint presentations just simply don't reflect the reality on the ground. And I'm tempted to think that there's too many officials in this department who sit in air-conditioned offices and just wait for the stats to come to them, and they put way too much faith in the service managers and the officials in the various provinces to provide them with the correct statistics. And I do think that we need to really look seriously at this kind of government by remote control. I think the DBE has to do far more to interrogate for itself whether these stats are reliable. And I want to give an example about the textbooks. Now, when we went to the Eastern Cape, to the northern areas, we were addressed by the MEC, who told us very frankly that there was that the textbook hadn't been delivered. Now, this was the first week of school. And we were all quite shocked that the textbook hadn't been delivered. And he said, you know, but there's been these issues, and it's the first time it's happened in 3 years. But then when we went to the schools, the first two schools we went to, we asked them if they had the textbook. They said, no, the textbook hadn't been delivered. And they said, but that's not unusual, because the textbooks are never delivered. In fact, the one school said, we haven't had textbooks in 4 years. So they have to make their own arrangements. And I can give you the name of that school as well, because it'll be in my notes. I can't recall it offhand. So there's clearly a huge disjuncture between what is happening on the ground and what you're being told by your circuit managers. Now, on the topic of textbooks, I just think it is absolutely unacceptable that we can be a month and a half into the school year and 42% of the textbooks in the Eastern Cape haven't been delivered. Now, the HOD says that you say that the HOD has implemented a demand assessment exercise. But my question is, why was that demand assessment exercise not done before the year started? Surely, if that was such a good idea, and that he was such a visionary, he should have done it in August, July, whatever, last year, so that we could have the books in the schools. Because the most important thing to have is the books in the schools, and the books aren't in the schools. So please don't tell us that this guy has done a great job by calling for this demand assessment exercise when the books are not in the schools. So my question is, why was that assessment exercise not done in beforehand? And what are you doing to make sure that the books are in the schools? Surely the Department of Basic Education, you as officials, all of you sitting here, surely you have early warning systems in place for the provinces, so that you know in good time whether or not the provinces are on track. It cannot be a surprise to you when the books are not in the schools. You should know beforehand. You should be monitoring this stuff, because that is your job. You have one job, and that is your job. But again, I fear that there's too many officials earning great salaries, sitting in air-conditioned offices, and not getting the true picture of what's on the ground. And when they do get the true picture, it is too late. In that regard, I also want to raise the matter of the unsafe learning. Now, you say that you're awaiting the statistics from KZN in the Northwest. I just think it's completely unacceptable that they haven't given you the statistics, and that you sit here without the statistics for unsafe learners a month and a half into the school year. How can you not know? So you're telling us that you simply don't know how many unsafe learners are in those provinces. And there's no urgency that you've communicated. You don't seem to be particularly perturbed by it. And it makes you think that this is what's going wrong with our education system, is that people don't actually care at the top. So what are you doing to get these statistics? How can you not know how many unsafe learners? And you also don't know, also for those same two provinces, repeat offenders, you don't know the post-provisioning statistics of those two provinces. How is it possible? How can you not know those statistics? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Hearing this, and one of the reasons why we now go many times
raised quite sharply. You also raised the issue of the curriculum. When you were talking about such a certificate, you know, you haven't done mathematics. Part of what we are strengthening is the role of sector managers in guiding TUSAs on the curriculum and the role of the schools, because we think there is a lack. But that's why I'm saying some of the issues that you raised, Honorable Bishop, are issues that really should continue to sharpen the way that we do our work, and we will look at that and where there are specifics of either schools in the Eastern Cape or in Mpumalanga or wherever that we need to look into. We would appreciate that, because we will look into those areas. And the point that you make on special schools, that's what an oversight, and we must apologize about that. The fact that we did monitor, but the fact that we didn't extract them and look at them, you know, in a special way, because the special schools do face particular challenges that are there, you know, which we really have to deal with. And we will, maybe it's related, but we promise to come to the committee on those issues. I will not respond to all of the things, but I'll ask my colleagues just to take the broad highlights and not go into too much detail, but respond. All admissions, you can get it, but I want to say on his behalf, I think it was Honorable Baton who said, is there a framework in all of the areas that we drive right now? We've got clear sector plans. And that is why, in fact, there's been an improvement. There are still promises that don't do it in the way that we want. But there's a clear guideline and a sector plan from when the cutoff for admissions is to what you then do, the circulars that you send, the placing on websites so that everybody knows, you know, communicating. So we've got all of that in place, and we monitor according to that. There are provinces in particular that have a challenge, or the more rural provinces, because often their parents are not living with the children. They are working elsewhere. And sometimes the parents always hope that they will put them in better schools in urban areas. When that doesn't happen, they then come back and then we sit with children who have no place. And that's your maybe your KZN, your Eastern Cape, your Bopo. Those in particular have the problem of late applications because of their rurality, where people are moving elsewhere. But if you take the point and we will look at it. In terms of the issues around infrastructure, I will ask Edith to take those. And in terms of the PPN, Mr. Masamu will respond to those. And the questions on, do you want to speak to the issue of second chance? Or it was, so you've noted that. If I could just ask my colleagues to respond to that question, please.
Thank you, Chair. I will start first with the issue of spending terms. The MOA, there is an MOA that corresponds with not only with contracting with labor. We are working with provinces to start to look at implementation. So we will be communicating. Already we had a meeting whereby we are looking at rehabilitation, because when we look at the issue of furniture that is surplus in other provinces, yes, we are aware that there are provinces where there is surplus, Eastern Cape being one of them, and the provinces have started to, before they buy furniture, they look at the surpluses and then they move furniture from one school to the other. However, given that when the school reopens, then with regards to land transport, the issue of Chief Ngwenyama, we not only Ngwenyama, but in KZN, and remember in KZN, Department of Transport are funding. Ngwenyama is one of the schools that are in the list that has requested land transport, and we're still awaiting the OT to indicate if there are the position to transport because the funding is for transport. And then regarding the issue of sanitation in Eastern Cape and regarding other expenditure, I don't think that I will respond to that because I don't have a data with me. It's something that can be prepared and be reported in the next meeting together with the, there was a question of when people are trained will be eradicated. So those are the things that will be in the provincial plans and they can be responded to in the next meeting. And then
the next one was the issue of the cost provision that was raised in terms of what the cost provision was and the actual cost price. I cannot say in particular that it's a particular school, but the other issue that is the issue of customs pay. Because even if we can, we were instances in the school where half the teachers are teaching the classroom. Now the classrooms are normally bigger and there's also the issue of the interaction between the grades. Because if you find that the grades and the particularly secondary school and the premium, you find that their classes that are smaller, for instance the science and science classes should be very small, maybe 25 learners, but the history shows that just 45 learners. So these things happen mainly in those situations where classroom space is the challenge. In terms of the excess teachers not deployed in Mpumalanga, I'm not sure about the specific issue, but it happens that not all the excess teachers do get redeployed. Instances is where the profile of the teachers, if that teacher basically cannot teach in another school, but it's a few instances. There's also an allowance where there will be an educator who will be resigning or leaving there for whatever reason within the 6 months period. The educator declared in excess is not being deployed. Or probably there's no reasonable distance or things like distance where an educator and schools are quite far from where the educator is. Those are allowable and then, but they are compensated by adding posts in terms of the ARPO post so that those schools that have vacancies are not disadvantaged.
Thank you very much. Just to say the things which questions. Just finally before I hand over to the presentation, just to say the issue of
I'm going to the lady that like the president said today. Members include a visa, or visa, or
twice a week. It's something that we have to decide on as members of the committee, because there are certain committees that are meeting every day, like the finance committee with every day. If you think that our agenda is too much and you want to finish it bit by bit, just help me. Maybe it can be one of the proposals that in a week, let the basic education committee meet twice a week. And then in that case, we'll be able to address issues and not rush the way we are. Because the program is being controlled by parliament, not our own making. So for now, let's agree that we need to sit down and resolve it ourselves. Because we can't drag the department here. The department here travels all the way from Pretoria to come and address us. And there has been willingness on their part to respond to the issues. But our time as members of parliament is the one that needs them. That is why I'm saying that let's use all the avenues that we have to raise issues with the department. I hope that suffices.
Thank you.